It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 38 degrees, more or less fair skies, northwest winds to 12 miles per hour at the airport now, and they have 10 miles of visibility there. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies today with a high near 43, south winds to 10. Rain is likely late tonight, beginning about 1 a.m. through about 4 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies overnight tonight with a low of 36, south winds to 20. And partly sunny skies tomorrow, albeit with a 30% chance of rain in the morning. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's proposed Anton Larson Bay Road extension got a big federal boost. And Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of the legislature's funding for schools have left school officials wondering. And Bethel's Filipino community staged a heck of a dance at the Kamai Dance Festival. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. 15 states and the District of Columbia are joining the Department of Justice in suing Apple. They accuse the tech behemoth of stifling competition by blocking smaller rivals from accessing iPhone hardware and software. Attorney General Merrick Garland announced the DOJ's suit today.
Over the last two decades, Apple has become one of the most valuable public companies in the world. Today, its net income exceeds the individual gross domestic product of more than 100 countries. That is in large part due to the success of the iPhone, Apple's signature smartphone product.
Apple argues its restrictions protect privacy and security. Details of a $1.2 trillion package to keep the rest of the federal government funded are out, and now Congress has until the end of Friday to vote on it. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he plans to invite Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to address Congress. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports the move highlights a growing partisan divide over Israel's war in Gaza.
Speaker Johnson told CNBC he plans to invite Netanyahu to speak to Congress. Invitations to foreign leaders are usually issued jointly by the House Speaker and Senate Majority Leader. But Johnson has not consulted with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. Republicans denounced Schumer's speech last week that criticized Netanyahu's handling of the war in Gaza and called for new elections in Israel after the war concludes. Schumer said Israel has no stronger ally than the U.S., and he welcomes the prime minister to speak to Congress in a bipartisan way. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, The Capitol.
The State Department's evacuating more Americans from Haiti. Dozens of U.S. citizens have left Cap Haitien on a flight to Miami and in Port-au-Prince. Officials have managed to fly out 18 more Americans on helicopters across the border to the Dominican Republic. But millions of Haitians face the daily threats of killings, rape, and torture by gangs seeking to strengthen their hold in a country that for now is absent a functioning government. NPR's Zeta Peralta reports one prominent figure, a former cop turned gang leader named Jimmy Cherizier, remains at the forefront of the violence.
He has basically struck a deal with gangs who used to fight each other to now start working together, to start attacking strategic places in Haiti with one thing in mind, which is to topple the government. And in some ways, to gain a seat at the table of this government in Haiti.
NPR's Ada Peralta, who recently returned to Mexico City from Haiti. U.S. stocks have ended the day higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 269 points, or more than 0.5%, to settle at 39,781. The S&P was up 16, NASDAQ up 32 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak's proposed Anton Larson Bay Road extension has received a significant financial nudge forward from the federal government. Senator Lisa Murkowski announced on Wednesday that the project would receive $2.5 million in funding through the Congress's fiscal year 2024 appropriations package, which was signed into law earlier this month. Extending this road on Kodiak Island would provide year-round access to the northern part of the island, including an ice-free link by boat for the nearby communities of Port Lions and Ozinki. Murkowski said in a recorded statement that trucks and large vehicles, not just ATVs, will be able to use this road.
The project will also enable groceries and freight to be shipped by boat rather than expensive air freight during winter months. When completed, this project will be transformative to the communities of Ozinki and Port Lions.
The Alaska Department of Transportation began preliminary work on the road extension in the fall of 2015, but the vision for the road goes back more than a decade. DOT says the project would construct 2 miles of gravel road from the end of the existing 15-mile-long Anton Larson Bay Road, ending at a beach near Crag Point. The most recent funding announcement is included in 6 of 12 appropriations bills passed by Congress for this fiscal year. That includes hundreds of millions of dollars for Alaska, going to areas like fisheries research, infrastructure projects, and healthcare access. Duncan Fields with Ozinki's Spruce Island Development Corporation told KMXT the corporation deeply appreciates Murkowski's support for the road extension project. Fields went on to say that when the extension is complete, it will benefit everyone living on the west side of the island and Kodiak as a whole. Currently, the project has yet to finalize the design phase, and Fields estimates construction won't begin for at least a year or more. Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed a bill that would have permanently increased state education funding last week. The Alaska State Legislature failed to overturn that veto by one vote on Monday. As KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, school officials in Kodiak are left wondering when or if the state government will help.
Judy Karstens has been on the Kodiak Island Borough School District's Board of Education for about 6 years. She says she wasn't surprised when the governor vetoed the bill, but had hope until Monday when the override vote failed.
I had a few tears, not just for Kodiak, but for the whole state. And there's so many districts that are suffering much more than we are. And that makes me sad.
Districts around Alaska have had to operate without a significant increase to the base student allocation, or how the state funds districts per student, since before the pandemic. The legislature has approved some one-time funding boosts, but Dunleavy slashed an increase last year in half. The Kodiak Island Borough School District ended up needing to cut about $2 million from its budget over the summer to help pay for the current school year. Since the last increase to the BSA, schools have had to face high inflation with no financial commitment to education from the state. Karsten says the Kodiak Island Borough School District was also hit by a double whammy since the island's population is shrinking. That means less money for the district overall, too.
The population is decreasing, and we know that that's for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But we still need to provide an education to every student on this island.
Karsten says she's heard some legislators are rushing to write a new education bill to try to get some kind of funding boost to school districts again before the end of the session, but that might not be enough.
We have to look down the road. We can't just look at the 24-25 budget. We're going to face this for 3-4 years ahead unless we get funded very well.
Karsten says despite the recent snafu, she's still hoping for an increase of about $680 this year. The last education bill would have increased the BSA by the same amount. The Alaska legislative session is set to end in May. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
For transparency, Judy Karstens serves on KMXT's Community Advisory Board, but is not involved in newsroom decisions. While Bethel's Filipino community may be small, they made a big splash on the second day of the annual Kamai Dance Festival, showcasing the country's rich history from pre-colonial times into the modern era through dance. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
When the Bethel Filipino community dancers take the stage at the Chamay Dance Festival to perform the folk dance known as the Sakuting, There's little indication it's their first time dancing together. The staccato tapping of sticks, circling movements, and choreographed sparring tells a story from the Spanish colonial period of warring Christians and non-Christians on the island of Luzon. For each of the 16 performers, this is one of the folk dances they grew up with in the Philippines, and their rendition in Bethel leaves the festival attendees wanting more. Performer Reynold Hunter says the Filipino community dancers only began preparing for their Chamay debut a couple months earlier.
So we just started practicing January. Like most of us are teachers, actually. So our high school science, high school math, junior high. Yep.
The classroom where Hunter can normally be found teaching science is just down the hall at Bethel Regional High School. While some group members have been teaching for the Lower Kuskokwim School District for several years, others are just starting to adjust to life in Bethel.
Some of them just arrived like a few weeks ago.
But on stage, the performers look right at home. The dances that follow the sakuting take the audience on a tour through the history of the Philippines. From the indigenous folk sounds of the Cordillera Mountains found in the Ragrag Sakan, to the meditative bells of the Royal Muslim Fan Dance from the southern region of Mindanao. But the group saved the most well-known folk dance for last, the Tinikling from the central Visayas region. The dancers imitate the clever movements of the long-legged tikling bird as it plunders rice paddies and avoids bamboo traps set by farmers. Other accounts say the dance represents resistance to forms of punishment via spiked bamboo poles dealt out to field workers by Spanish colonizers. Whatever the case, the threat of having one's ankle clapped between two large poles provides a strong incentive for the dancers to stay on beat. But instead of bamboo, 10-foot lengths of plumbing pipe serve as a reliable stand-in.
We weren't able to get one, so we just use, well, we improvise.
Hunter, who has been teaching in Bethel since 2021, is hopeful the Filipino community dancers can continue to grow and can continue to be an outlet for making new arrivals to the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta feel a little closer to home. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Several of the allegations against Anchorage Mayor Dave Bronson's administration of illegal, unethical, and unprofessional behavior are valid. That's the conclusion of an independent investigator. Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea has more.
Anchorage Ombudsman Daryl Hess's 20-page report describes his investigation into complaints filed in December of 2022. Hess doesn't name the complainant, but we know through the complainant's attorney that it's Amy Domboski. Domboski was Mayor Dave Bronson's first municipal manager. Bronson abruptly fired her at the end of 2022. Then Domboski went public, saying the work environment was toxic, accusing the mayor and other high-level officials of a wide range of inappropriate behavior, and suing the mayor for wrongful termination. In his report, the ombudsman concludes that three of Domboski's six allegations filed with his office were justified. One, city workers knowingly violated city code when they raised the capacity of the city-run mass homeless shelter at the Sullivan Arena. Two, sole-source contracts awarded to Larry Baker to serve as a senior policy advisor did not follow the city's purchasing code. And three, the city purchasing director, Rochelle Alger, distributed penis-shaped cookies to workers at City Hall, though the city's Human Resources Department did follow up with disciplinary action. In a letter to the ombudsman ahead of the report's publication, Alger objected to references to private material that hurt her reputation, the ombudsman's conclusion on the Baker contracts, the rehashing of a settled disciplinary matter, and a legal issue that did delay the report's publication. A fourth allegation that Baker pressured city prosecutors to drop domestic violence charges against a business partner was referred to another agency. The ombudsman's report also concluded two of Domboski's complaints were not valid. Lawyer Scott Kendall is representing Domboski in her wrongful termination lawsuit. In a statement, he said she is pleased with the ombudsman's investigation. The heart of Domboski's wrongful termination claim is that her firing was illegal retaliation for, in Kendall's words, her attempts to rein in the Bronson administration's unethical and illegal activities. Veronica Hoxie, a spokesperson for the mayor's office, called attention to the timing of the release of the ombudsman's report. Voting is underway in the city's election, which ends April 2nd, and Bronson is running for re-election.
The allegations of this report are nearly 2 years old, if not older. They've been handled, they've been addressed. And you have the Ombudsman's Office that is hired by, paid for, and funded via the Anchorage Assembly, the same body of government that also oversees municipal elections.
Hoxie said it was just an observation and did not explicitly allege ulterior motives. In the report, Hess did address some timing issues. He said he intended to release the report on February 9th, but it got delayed by competing legal interpretations over when the office must drop investigations. A code change, which the mayor vetoed and the assembly overrode Tuesday night, resolved the legal ambiguity. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Just how much money Alaska's public schools will get from the state is up in the air after lawmakers fell one vote short of overriding Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a funding boost and reform package. The Republican-led House majority says they're working on another deal, but the bipartisan supermajority in the Senate says there's not much room left for compromise. To learn more, Alaska News Nightly host Wesley Early spoke with Alaska Public Media state government reporter Eric Stone.
So I know Governor Dunleavy said he's ready to move on to addressing energy issues. So are lawmakers throwing up their hands and moving on?
Well, not yet. They are moving some energy proposals, but Republican House Speaker Kathy Tilton says they're able to walk and chew gum at the same time, so to speak. She says there are about 24 education bills pending, and one that's drawing some attention is called House Bill 392. It's backed by House Resources Chair Rep. Tom McKay from Anchorage. He's a Republican who voted against the override.
Our decision was to offer an alternative, to offer an option, so that when folks came in to vote on the veto override, they could have some comfort to know that there's another education spending bill, a policy bill in the Education Committee, HB 392, that they could look to solve the problem of needing more policy in the bill and maintaining a high BSA.
And I got to tell you, I'm a little puzzled by this bill. It's almost exactly the same bill as the one that Dunleavy vetoed, plus the governor's plan for teacher bonuses of $5,000 to $15,000 per year. Tilton also spotlighted a bill in the House Education Committee that would allow the State Board of Education, appointed by the governor, to directly authorize new charter schools. Now, those two items, state-authorized charter schools and teacher bonuses, are what the governor called on lawmakers to pass when he issued his veto threat. It puts them on a collision course with the Senate.
And where is the Senate on all of this?
Well, it's safe to say that the senators who voted to override the veto are not happy. Senator Jesse Bjorkman, a Nikiski Republican, says funding outside the formula, the one-time funding that's been common in recent years, is inefficient. Basically, he's saying that if you give one-time money, schools are going to spend it on one-time things. Computers, TVs, that kind of thing. Not more teachers and aides to reduce class sizes and, you know, make teaching more effective. Basically, you don't have to pay a TV a salary every year, so it makes sense to buy it with one-time money. Senate President Gary Stevens, he's a Kodiak Republican. He says the supermajority made up of all but three senators is still committed to finding some way forward. But he's saying, more or less, you break it, you fix it.
20 majority legislators in the House were able to kill the overriding of the governor's veto. That's only one-third of the legislature. The onus is now on them, I believe, on the House to send us meaningful legislation.
But the Senate's lead negotiator, that's Senator Bill Wilkowski, an Anchorage Democrat, he's saying there's not much room left for compromise, especially on the charter school issue.
So why do they say there may not be room for compromise? What are the major sticking points?
Well, basically, they're saying they've given a lot already. So the bill that passed the House and Senate but was vetoed, that would have created a new dedicated position within the Education Department to help parents and districts create new charter schools and a new appeals process for charters that get shut down. And Wilkowski said he offered more concessions during negotiations over the veto, basically shortening the time it takes to get a new charter school approved. He called it a compromise to the compromise to the compromise. But he says the governor's proposal could allow a school district to be forced to fund and operate a charter school it doesn't approve of. And for Wilkowski and for most of the Senate, that's non-negotiable.
The line was state charter schools. The line was the state doing that, perhaps against the local community's wishes. And that was a line that many people just couldn't cross.
As for the bonus proposal, he said the $60 million a year program would be an expensive experiment that hasn't really been tested.
Okay, so if both the Senate and the governor see those as red lines, that's not great news for people who want to see a long-term funding boost for schools.
Now, not everyone in the Senate thinks those are necessarily red lines. Senator Shelley Hughes is a Palmer Republican who's one of only three senators not in the majority caucus, and she's skeptical of the claim that allowing the state to authorize charter schools would put the state and local districts at odds. But even so, she suggests giving universities or local governments the power to charter new schools. That could be a compromise. And on the teacher bonuses, Hughes says there's room for compromise there, too.
So I think there are different ways to structure that teacher incentive payment. I think the governor's three-year plan, I personally don't agree with that. I think it should be spread out over more years.
So instead of offering bonuses in years 1, 2, and 3, maybe years 2, 4, and 6, or 3, 6, and 9, and maybe tying it to signing new contracts for the following year to make sure people don't just take the money and run. But the way things are going, it's not clear to me that we'll get any sort of new compromise anytime soon.
That was Wesley Early talking with Eric Stone. The Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly has approved the lease of a one-acre Cooper Landing parcel to a concrete company amid vocal protests from local residents who say the location is dangerous and will impact their safety and quality of life. As KDLL's Riley Board reports, despite suggestions of other sites and passionate testimony, the assembly passed the ordinance almost unanimously.
The lease would offer Kenai-based company Davis Block and Concrete a place to set up a batch plant to supply concrete for the building of the Juneau Creek Bridge and major Cooper Landing Bypass Highway project over the next 5 years. The site is on Snug Harbor Road, which runs along the south edge of Kenai Lake. Cooper Landing residents, many who live along Snug Harbor Road, turned out in strong opposition to the lease. The assembly received 46 pages of public comment, almost all against the site, in advance of its meeting Tuesday night. During public testimony on the ordinance, residents urged the assembly to table the lease, citing safety concerns about concrete trucks traversing the rural road.
The gist of the petition is that funneling concrete trucks through a neighborhood that already deals with excessive vehicles and speeding vehicles is dangerous.
This is Snug Harbor resident Karen Button, who circulated a petition against the site, testifying Tuesday. She says the petition has more than 100 signatures, gathered over less than 2 weeks.
And having those trucks share an intersection with emergency vehicles, particularly in the summer, is untenable.
The plant location would be down the road from Cooper Landing Emergency Services, the community's EMS provider. Residents also expressed environmental concerns about the site's proximity to Kenai Lake and said the site's classification of light industrial was not appropriate for a concrete batch plant. Others, like David Neese, criticized the short timeline and lack of community engagement with which the local Cooper Landing Advisory Planning Commission approved the lease.
We don't have a voice in this process. You're our backstop. We don't want that plant there because we were given notice of real close to the minimum.
The local planning group voted on the ordinance during a Zoom-only special meeting with just a couple days of public notice in late February. It passed in a 5-1 vote. In response, members of the public proposed 4 different potential sites for the batch plant. Land management agent Aaron Hughes told the assembly Tuesday night that one is currently leased to another agency, one is classified as rural and residential, one is owned by the state, and one is owned by the U.S. Forest Service, making none of them viable options. The assembly also heard testimony from a representative of the company Davis Block, who said he had no concerns about safely operating trucks on the road. During discussions, Eastern Peninsula Assembly member Cindy Eklund reiterated concerns about the site and proposed other sites closer to the bridge and bypass, but she was alone in her opposition. Brent Hibbert, the Kalifornsky Assembly member, said no location would make everyone happy.
We have a road that is way past due, the bypass up there, and I think that it's not going to be perfect for everyone, residents of Snug Harbor. It's not going to be perfect for Davis Block, and it's probably not going to be perfect for the residents, you know, going up and down the road to Anchorage, but it's something that I think that we can all deal with.
The assembly ultimately supported the lease in an 8-1 vote, with Eklund the only vote against. Work at the site is set to begin this summer. In Soldotna, I'm Riley Board.
The Bethel Regional High School cheer team took second place in the whole state over the weekend. As KYUK's Sage Smiley reported, it matches the team's best performance in at least the last decade.
In warrior blue, yellow, and white, the Bethel Regional High School cheer team jumped, danced, and stuck their tricks to take second place at the state championship in Anchorage on March 19th.
It was really exciting.
Cheer co-captain senior Jordan Klaika says the team has been growing all season.
It felt amazing. We've had a really good season, and so we were really just excited going to state, and our focus was having fun with it. So we were more trying to have fun than be technical, and it really worked because then all of our technique just fell into place.
In addition to the team's second place finish at state, Klaika was named to the all-tournament team. She also made the all-tournament team at the Western Region Championships earlier this month, where Bethel Regional High School cheer team placed first. It's the second year in a row that Bethel has taken second in state. Co-captain Klaika says she attributes the team's success this year to the rebuilding they've done following the COVID-19 pandemic.
I think just more experience, because after COVID we didn't have all that knowledge, and we've been slowly building it back up and getting more knowledge, meeting other teams, which has been really nice.
As for what it takes to put on a state podium-worthy performance?
Energy. Lots and lots of energy and a strong team. Good dynamic, great dynamic between the team.
It's Klaika and her senior co-captain Maya Komulainen's third time at state and ties for their best performance. Klaika says it's a good end to the season.
I'm just so proud of my team. I love them all so much.
With reporting from Shane Iverson in Bethel, I'm Sage Smiley.
The Biden administration is canceling student loan debt for public service workers. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. These are teachers, social workers, firefighters, and others under a pre-existing loan forgiveness program. The administration made changes, and 80,000 more borrowers qualified. That brings the total to nearly 900,000 who have had their debt canceled. Prior to a series of changes, only about 7,000 had benefited. The Congressional Budget Office reduced its forecast for how much the federal debt will grow over the next 30 years. Not as much as previously expected. The CBO is crediting less government spending and more immigration, which should strengthen the labor force. Initial claims for unemployment benefits again hovered around 210,000 last week. That's the fourth week in a row. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 21st day of March, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:06. It will set again at 8:27, giving us 12 hours and 21 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 5 minutes compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees. That was set in 1935, then again in 1979, and then again in 2005. Our record low was 7 degrees, set in Chile, 1975. Currently 38 degrees under fairly fair skies. Northwest winds at 12 miles per hour at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon, with a high near 43 and south winds to 10. Look for rain late tonight, starting about 2 a.m. and going through about 5 a.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 36, south winds to 20. For tomorrow, partly sunny skies mostly. Look for a 30% chance of rain in the morning, south winds to 15. And rain is likely to begin Friday night and go through the weekend. Look for the rain to be heavy at times on Saturday. Looking at our local tides, we have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen in just about 20 minutes at 12:43. That'll be a 7.8-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:27 p.m. of 0.3 foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 1:20 this afternoon and be 12 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a low tide at 7:55 p.m. of 0.5 foot. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow. South winds to 20, becoming south 25 tonight. 6-foot seas building to 9 feet tonight. South 20 and 9-foot seas tomorrow. And for Saturday, on our east side, southeast 35, and seas to 13 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight with south winds to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. For tonight, southeast 25 and seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, south 15, seas to 4 feet. Friday night, though, the east winds are going to come up to 30 knots, seas to 6 feet. And for Saturday in the Shelikof, east winds to 35 knots and 10-foot seas. A little closer to home, Chiniak Bay, south winds to 15 knots today and 2-foot seas, becoming south 20 tonight with 3-foot seas, south 20 tomorrow with 3-foot seas, too. But on Saturday in Chiniak Bay, look for southeast winds to 30 knots and seas up to 11 feet. A lost poodle was wandering around Mission Road between 14 and 1600 block. It was wearing a red sweater vest. If you know whose dog this is, please tell them. And give us a call for an update if that dog has been found, please. On Friday, tomorrow 12 to 1 p.m., the Kodiak Archipelago Project kickoff meeting for harmful algal blooms is happening. That's going on in the Kodiak Conference Room on Near Island, being hosted by CANA, NOAA, and the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The team is assembling March 22nd for a winter survey aboard the Oscar Dyson, and they're inviting everyone to come meet the team and learn more about this multi-year and multi-tiered project to identify and study harmful algal blooms around Kodiak Island. Again, that's tomorrow, 12 to 1 p.m., in the Kodiak Conference Room on Near Island. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Thursday, March 21st, at 6:30 p.m., the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. Well, it's happening this weekend, starting tomorrow and going through Saturday, the second annual FanCon. It's happening at the library. It was a big hit last year. And this year, there's something for everyone, from cosplay to video games, trivia, and more. Stop in or call the library for specific times for panels and events. FanCon is completely free to the public. No registration is required. And it's open for all ages. Again, FanCon, Friday and Saturday, 10 to 8 p.m. Give them a call on the phone at 486-8686 for more specifics. And it's On Your Mark, Get Set, and Mush. Kodiak Public Library's annual reading challenge highlighting the Iditarod runs through the month of March. Read 1,000 minutes or more, keep track of your reading, or write a book review and win prizes. For all ages, sign up at kodiak.beanstack.org or pick up a paper copy at the library. And the escape room is open now. Sessions are Mondays and Fridays at 3 p.m., Tuesdays at 6 p.m., and Saturdays at 11 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library. Patrons under 14 must be with an adult, and it's for groups of four or less. Call or stop in at the library to sign up. The Choose Respect March for 2024 is happening next Wednesday on the 27th of March. Alaskans ending the epidemic of domestic and sexual violence will be marching in the Join the Choose Respect March initiative to encourage the formation of healthy, respectful relationships and promote a culture of no tolerance for domestic and sexual violence. Help share the message of hope and healing at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium parking lot next Wednesday, and that starts at 12 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.